You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Daniel Horowitz is in the house, well, virtually at least. He is joining us from Conservative Review, where he is a senior editor. He has been, as I have said, a contributor to many other outlets over the years. He was a policy director at the Madison Project, a contributor to The Blaze and Breitbart, Red State, and much, much more. He is the author of Stolen Sovereignty, a book we'll be talking about in some detail here in a moment, as it involves, the transformation of America that unelected judges are engaged in. But Daniel, before we get to all of that, I wanted to talk about the transformation of America that seems to be afoot as a result of this, shall we say, blind eye that has been turned, at worst, its actual enabling of immigration in vast numbers, legal and even illegal, by people on both sides of the aisle. And I just wanted to tease this or set this conversation up by noting two things. One of Tony Blair's assistants back in his time in government in the United Kingdom acknowledged that there was a deliberate policy on the part of the Labour Party in Britain to essentially import large numbers of principally South Asians to change the electorate of that country to their advantage. The Center for American Progress, George Soros's think tank that is a prime font of ideas and stratagems for the left in this country, has acknowledged a similar need to get this DACA thing and immigration more generally sorted out so they can keep importing new voters. Talk about that as a political force and dynamic and what it means for, as you say, the long-term character and direction of our country.
Well, this is the invisible hand behind all efforts to open up the borders. It's all political because, again, why would any country's leadership willingly destroy their own country? Why would they self-immolate? It's just one big exercise in national masochism. Obviously, there's many facets to this. You know, you have assimilation. In our case, we want Americanization. You have the preservation of language. You have the fiscal drain. Then you have, as it relates particularly to the mass migration from Islamic countries, that is the real existential threat of just overthrowing and supplanting your way of your system of governance for Sharia law, or at least the Sharia mentality, until it reaches critical mass. And, you know, in chapter 6 of my book, Stolen Sovereignty, I go through all sorts of quotes from the founding era, what our founders thought about immigration, what they wanted. And the biggest thing they wanted, certainly they never dreamt of immigrants as a fiscal drain, of not assimilating, not speaking the language. Certainly they never dreamed of a welfare state even for Americans, much less foreign nationals coming to add to it. But what they particularly wanted was what they called Republican Americans. It's funny, they didn't use the term, you know, hyphenated Americanism, but the one term they used that was hyphenated was Republican Americans, and I don't mean the Republican Party. It was the Democratic Republican values. And they were concerned that even mass migration from Europe, people of similar ancestry to the founders, wouldn't have that zeal. They would have their monarchical and aristocratical government mentality. As Theodore Sedgwick, bemoaned in the 1790 immigration bill debate, and they wanted it to be gradual. They never could have imagined people coming from far off places. And here's the key, Frank, in large numbers. You know, it's funny how you listen to people bemoaning Trump's comments with the blank holes and, oh, this is racist, we should have people from there too. Well, there's people and there's people. A brilliant column, in my mind, one of the most brilliant columns ever written by Thomas Sowell, was an article he wrote about abstract immigrants. And he made fun out of the political elites, how they speak about immigration in the abstract. Oh, it's great how they come and they become American and they're fleeing these countries. They want to be America. And in the abstract, it has worked like that from some places in the past. It still does in certain circumstances, but in other places, it doesn't. And the number time, origin together as a mixed matter. You could have a certain number of people because then you get individuals assimilating into a melting pot. But if you bring in large quantities and then each country combined 50 blank holes with large quantities, well, guess what? You get the blank hole. You don't get individuals coming. That was a common sense principle that both parties understood until fairly recently. But as you noted, if you want to supplant the population and create a permanent majority for Democrats here or the Labour Party in Britain, that's exactly how you do it, because they'll come and they'll be on welfare. You know, one other thing, Frank, it's funny how everyone is saying, oh, Trump's making this up. These people are hard workers. Again, in the abstract, you could talk about these people all you want. But in terms of majorities, I went through a conservative review and on my show, the census data going through poverty rates, welfare usage by country of origin for immigrants. And it's just stark. I mean, you know, Central American and Mexican immigrants have an average income of 30,000 from Europe. European immigrants are average of about 65,000. And basically, the only immigrants who vote Republican are either from Europe or certain countries in Asia. And that directly correlates with poverty rates and welfare usage. I mean, it's obvious.
Daniel, again, this is the underlying truth that once one separates out the thrashing over the specific words Donald Trump used, if you not only, as you say, bring in large numbers of people over a relatively short period of time, but they also happen to have in common a set of values or you know, sort of institutional tendencies, shall we say, or cultural experiences that are, well, fundamentally at odds with what are American traditional values and institutions and norms, if you will. It does have an impact. There's no question about it. Let me just give you one example, which is much on my mind, Daniel, and that is until fairly recently, we had very little problem in this country with a practice known as female genital mutilation, which is an unbelievably barbaric practice associated with some countries in Africa and the Middle East and South Asia, some traditions, particularly in the Islamic faith. But it is now estimated by the Centers for Disease Control to be something that some number, and they've estimated 513,000 women and girls in America have either already been subjected to or are at risk of having it happen to them. Now, this is again, just in a microcosm, that sort of transformation that we're talking about, and you're so right to say it, it needs to be discussed in the detail, not in the abstract. But what are your thoughts about that and what it represents more broadly?
This is what even some conservatives are missing about this debate. Terrorism doesn't happen in a vacuum. Terrorism is a tactic brought about by a broader subculture that cultivates that climate. And I get the impression from listening to even some conservative Republican politicians that we should pretty much let in anyone unless we categorically or definitively know about that individual that they plan on such and such date to blow up, you know, this building.
Yeah, the default setting is they get to come in as though they have some right to do so. Daniel, hold the thought because we have to pause for just a second. This is such an important topic, and I'm delighted to be able to drill down on it at length with Daniel Horowitz, the author of Stolen Sovereignty, How to Stop Unelected Judges from Transforming America, the star of his own program at CRTV. Check it out. We'll be right back with more with Daniel Horowitz right after this.